Let's get her started. Padded Room Radio is back on the air, you maniacs. My name is Darian, and I have returned for another week of horror bullshit. Coming straight to your face holes, as usual, it's another solo show, goddammit. I really thought Buddy was going to be here, but then he texted me about 2 hours ago and said, no can do, senor. He's got to work. He's got to work, man. You can't fault him for that, right? I wouldn't be here either if I had to work. In a way, this kind of is work for me, though. So here we are. It's just me and you and some horror movies to talk about this week. And some other horse shit, because why not? Why not drag you into my personal bullshit? Hey, you downloaded me, all right? You can't be mad. You chose to be here. And so did I, so I can't really be mad either. We got a horror show to get into here, inmates. I am a little tired. I'm going to be honest with you. I had a very busy weekend. Leprechaun Chase 5K with the whole family. That's always an adventure. After that, we had going from that right into back-to-back flag football games. That was taxing, to say the least. And then from there, directly to a St. Patrick's Day dinner. This is on a Sunday. You understand that? I got to get up early the next day to go to work. I'm out gallivanting and running 5Ks all day Sunday. And, yeah, fuck that, man. And then I felt like shit yesterday at work. But now I'm here, and I feel better already because I get to vent. And you people have to listen, and there's nothing you can do about it. If you haven't already unsubscribed and deleted this episode, which I would fully understand if you did, by the way. All right, enough about me. Let's get into some horror business here, inmates. We got horror news, listener mail, all kinds of fun things to talk about. How about we start things off with a little of the old horror news?
Horror news.
Yes, sir. Well, we might as well go ahead and address the elephant in the room. I know we've all seen it. I'm talking about the trailers for The Crow remake, starring Bill Skarsgård, Danny Houston, and some other people, probably a couple of SoundCloud rappers in there, too. Okay, so it seems to me that it's being universally shit on by just about everybody. And I get it. I understand why. I'm not going to join them in shitting on it also. I'll tell you that I think it looks good. It looks ultra-violent. So I think the main thing that people are moaning and bitching about is that it lacks that Crow grunge gothic kind of element. But to be fair, this isn't 1996 anymore. You know what I mean? You got to update some things. Brandon Lee is dead. God rest his soul. You don't want to make a shot-for-shot remake. Those never work out well. So you got to update some things. You got to change some things. I'm going to say I'm not mad at it. Is it the Crow that we know and love? No. I'm going to tell you right now, it's probably going to be better than Crow Wicked Prayer. Or Salvation, probably City of Angels, because then let's, hey, come on. There's some fucking shit crow movies out there. I don't know why everybody's all pissed off about this one. We just had an Edward Furlong crow movie, okay? Think about that. You're mad at Bill Skarsgård because he's skinny or what? I showed it to my wife. She was ready to go after watching that trailer. I don't think he's going to wear a shirt at all for the entire movie. I could be wrong about that. I'm going to be optimistic about this one. I'm going to tell you I'm still excited. I wasn't expecting the 90s, you know, emo vibe to continue. It would have been nice if they had found a way to, you know, kind of curtail it in there. But this isn't 1996 anymore, inmates. It's 2024. And we got guys with really bad haircuts and tattoos on their faces. So, hey, just be glad he's, you know, he's actually going to kill some people and not just stare at his fucking phone, because I feel like that's what most kids would do. Oh, you killed my girlfriend. I'm going to fucking get you canceled off of TikTok, you son of a bitch. All right, that's what that is. What else we got here? Speaking of remakes, are you ready for a Tourist Trap remake being produced by Barbara Crampton? Now, before I give you my thoughts on Tourist Trap, let's talk about the last film that was remade that Barbara Crampton was a part of the production team. She wasn't in the movie. There is actually a remake of Castle Freak out there, directed by a guy named Tate Steinsprike, I believe is his last name. I actually dug it quite a bit. I thought it was a pretty good show. A lot of people shit on it. If you're a huge Castle Freak fan, I'm talking about the goddamn Full Moon, Barbara Crampton, what's his name there, Jeffrey Combs, 1984, if I'm not mistaken. It's not that good. I'm going to be honest. It's not that good of a movie. Okay? Now, that being said, I'm not a huge fan of Tourist Trap. I know a lot of people love it. I don't know why. It's a movie about killer mannequins with the dumbest possible ending that you could possibly conceive, with Chuck Connors really hamming it up. So that being said, I'm going to say I'm excited for this because I'm not... Tourist Trap is not sacred ground for me. So by all means, neither is Castle Freak. That's probably why I like the remake a little bit better. I'll check it out. I'm going to check this one out. I don't care if they remake it, if they, you know... It's killer mannequins, bros. Okay? And there's like a... There's some very silly shit going. If you've seen Tourist Trap, a lot of people hold it on the horror high ground. I think probably because it scared them as a kid. I understand that. But at the same time, you watch it now, you got to understand it's not that good. You know what I mean? The mannequins do some really silly shit. And when it gets to the end and it's explained why the mannequins are doing all the shit, okay. That's, yeah. I'm not going to ruin it for you in case you haven't seen it, but it's the end. The explanation, the wrap up is very, very silly. What else we got here? Okay. It's a good thing Jason Harrell's not here because he would be snapping a pencil in half as I read this next story. It looks like Neve Campbell is confirmed to return as Sidney Prescott in Scream 7. I'm okay with this. I'm all right with this because, let's be honest, Scream 6 sucked a bag of dicks. Scream 5, nominal. Well, you know, I'm going to say I think I like Scream 6 a little bit better than Scream 5. But no Sidney Prescott in Scream 6. And I think we all pretty much agree that Scream 6 was not good. Probably, possibly the worst of the franchise. So they made a mistake by not throwing bags of money at Neve Campbell, obviously. And now they're trying to fix it. And I can respect that. Kevin Williamson also returning to direct. So I think this could be a step in the right direction. Hopefully they do something with, what's her name there? Aiden Panettiere. And we can move forward and we can still be friends, okay? We don't have to break up with Ghostface over this. We don't have to block him from Instagram. We can move past our differences and work things out with the Scream franchise, I feel like. What else do we got here? I got some bad news, bros. It looks like this August at New Jersey's Monster Mania convention will most likely be Clive Barker's last appearance at a horror convention. He is not doing well. That throat cancer has really fucked him up, and let's be honest, he's getting up there in the years, you know. And I don't think he's even writing anymore. Has he written anything recently? I think the last thing I read of his was the Scarlet Gospels, and that was, what, 6-8 years ago? I don't know. Yeah, I wish I could make it. He's a horror hero of mine. But I just, that's sad, man. You know, I should have jumped on that train before his health started failing. So hopefully any of you inmates on the East Coast can make it to Monster Mania and see Clive one more time before he checks out on us. Lastly, this is silly. Lastly, it looks like creators of Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey, are teasing a quote-unquote Pooniverse. That's not a porno thing, I promise. They're trying to make a cinematic universe of these Disney horror adaptation things, reprisals, whatever you want to call them. I'm okay with that. I'll check it out. I haven't seen Blood and Honey 2 yet. What were we talking about last week? Vampire? Some kind of a vampire Bambi situation? They're going to try and bring them all together in some kind of fucking fuck up your childhood situation. They're calling it the Pooniverse. That's very cute. Very funny there. That's all I got on the horror news, man. If I didn't ruin your day already. Let's get into some listener mail, shall we?
Listener mail.
Yes, sir. No emails this week. We do have a voicemail or two. Let's see who's up first on the mental health hotline. From Anderson, Indiana, here comes Coop Nukem.
Hey, just wanted to call, get my three on the meat hook
okay.
in. Forgot last week.
Oh, you're fine.
I actually had a good one, a few good ones, and I lost my list. And
you fucker.
I fail as a human being.
You failed.
Anyway, wanted to get this one in. This one was Small Town Horror.
Yeah, buddy.
And so I have to put number three.
Yeah.
As the series Stranger Things takes place in a fake town called Hawkins, Indiana.
I'm aware.
Doesn't exist here, but
that's
anyway, that one's my number three.
Okay.
I like that series. The earlier ones, I think, are better. But anyway, number two. I got Slither. I believe that took place in some, I think it was South Carolina.
That sounds about right.
Small town in South Carolina.
Yeah, buddy.
Anyway, that one's a very fun one.
I love it.
And number one, Darian, I have got to put this because of you, and you know why.
Well, I don't know.
Number one will be Needful Things takes place in Castle Rock, Maine.
Castle Rock.
Anyway, as you know, these things happen.
These things happen.
That's all I got. Take care.
Right on. Thanks for calling in, Coop. Oh, that is a high. I don't think that movie gets enough love. Needful Things. Max von Sydow in that one. I used to, when me and Coop were in the Marine Corps together, I used to quote that all the time, and it would drive him crazy. He would come in bitching about one thing or another. I said, Coop, these things happen. Shut the fuck up, Brock. All right. Right on, man. Thanks for calling in. Needful Things, he brought up. My kid is in love with Needful Things. I think he's seen the entire series at least 6 or 7 times. I'm about sick of it. You know, it's a good show, really. I didn't think he would lean that hard into it because it's sci-fi, but it definitely has a horror undertone to it. The Demogorgon, whatever that fucking thing is in the last season. I'm like three seasons behind on it. I will get caught up at some point. Hey, I got caught up on House of Usher. I pulled that off, didn't I? Give me some credit. Here comes Tom Hardy. Hey-o!
Hey-o! Padded Room, how's my favorite degenerate this week?
I'm pretty good.
Well, I do hope everyone is doing well. Wanted to get in real quick on the educating department.
Yeah, what do you think?
I think I got you there.
Come on now.
That we are still here.
You are still here.
I love that flick, man.
It's a good one.
I don't know. It's been a while since I've seen like a good new horror flick, man.
And that's a good one.
When I ended up catching that, and I thought that was a great flick.
Me too.
Anyway, didn't have much to catch this week. I did see the What Are You Looking At department. I did get to catch the Thanksgiving flick.
What do you think?
I don't know. I thought it was fun, man.
Me too.
I thought it was a good flick.
I'm not bad at it.
Eli Roth. Question, and I don't know if maybe y'all know about this, but it seemed like the flick was, you know, quote unquote, you know, kind of grounded in reality. You know,
sure.
They're not totally, you know, it's not like a Nightmare on Elm Street
type
thing.
No supernatural kind of stuff.
Supernatural element.
Yeah.
Why was the kills and the blood so, like, out there? Is it just Eli Roth trying to be Eli Roth, or is it?
I have a theory.
I don't know. All in all, though, I thought it was a good flick. I'd recommend it.
Me too.
Yeah. Anyway, on the meat hook there, small town horror.
Yeah, what do you think?
I'm not sure I'd go with Scream as a small town horror.
Woodsboro.
But if it is, yeah, you'd have to put me in for that.
Okay.
For myself, though, put me down for Frighteners.
Oh,
great
yeah.
fucking flick.
That is a good one.
The Fog.
Antonio Bay.
I Know What You Did Last Summer.
I forget the name of that.
Definitely small town flicks, and I feel like the fact that it was a small town, like, kind of played into the story itself.
Yeah.
Anyway, hope all is well. Love you like family. Bye now.
Love you, Tom Hardy. That's good stuff right there, man. Yeah, as far as Eli Roth goes, especially Thanksgiving, I was trying with, so I kind of bonded with one of the football moms from one of my kids' moms from my flag football team that I coach. She's a horror fan too, and we were talking about Thanksgiving. The thing that you have to kind of remember is if you can, Grindhouse, right? So almost probably close to 20 years ago, the Grindhouse movies came out, Death Proof and fucking Planet Terror. And if you remember, and you went and saw the double feature like you were supposed to, Thanksgiving was just a commercial in between the two movies. And it was completely ridiculous. I mean, at one point, there's like a giant turkey having sex with a lady on a kitchen table. And then it's just blood, 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 and then screaming and running, and then blood, blood, blood. And then I think a shirt got ripped open and blood, blood, blood. So I think what Eli Roth was trying to do, and I could be completely off base here, was that he was trying to capture that vibe from that trailer that he made. Also, he brings up We Are Still Here. Have we all seen this one? This is a good one. It's Larry Fessenden, Glass Eye Picks. Barbara Crampton in that, they didn't ugly her up, but I think this is the least attractive version of Barbara Crampton you will ever see. I'm talking about a tight 1982 bowl cut, complete with burnt orange turtleneck sweater, weird vest situation. It's not good, man. Great movie. Her, not so much. Right on, Tom Hardy. Thanks for calling in, amigo. Let's see who's next up on the mental health hotline here. We have the main man from Alabama. Alan's in the house.
Padded Room, what's up?
What's up, Alan?
Hope everybody's good. So let's see, small town horror movies. I'm gonna go 30 Days of Night.
Sure. Yeah, that's a good one.
Pet Sematary.
Okay.
And I had this list in my head before I called y'all.
I hate
30
that.
30 Days of Night, Pet Sematary, and The Wicker Man.
The Wicker
anyway,
Man.
That's all
okay.
I got. I don't know who Mr. Darien is. Hope everybody's doing good. Talk to y'all later. Bye.
Tom Hardy was the only one to get me this week. You get a gold star, Mr. Hardy. Thanks for calling in, Alan. He brings up a good point about the Wicker Man that I didn't consider. There's this new trend. Well, I guess it's not new, but it's a weird new spotlight, I guess, on a certain sub-horror subgenre, folk horror. What exactly entails... I just watched a documentary about it. I still don't know what the fuck qualifies folk horror from just other horror. You could call it small-town horror. You could call it horror based on folk tales. I guess that would be the most sense-making option, for lack of a better term. But the Wicker Man, for sure. Island small town, which is the same thing, really. Right on, Alan. Thanks for calling in, amigo. Yeah, small town horror. I think it's creepier, dude, to have that small town element. I'm a city boy myself, but I often wonder what life is like for a kid in a small town, you know? Especially like in the formative years. We get a pretty good snapshot of that in like 99% of Stephen King's work. But looking at it from the perspective of a 80s and 90s, mid 80s to late 90s kid, you know? What does that look like? How would I be different if I had grown up in a small town? I don't know. I would like to think that, it's a more wholesome situation. But then you have the element of everybody knowing everybody else's business. And, you know, you can't keep a secret in a small town. You can't. And you can't hide from your problems. It's a whole other fucking dynamic, dude. All right, enough about that. I got to, speaking of small towns, here comes another one. It's time to get into a movie, motherfuckers.
Burn, witch, burn, witch, burn, burn, burn.
So shouted the people of Whitewood when they burned Elizabeth Selwyn in 1692.
Going to a place called Whitewood for a week or so to do some research.
Whitewood? How many God-fearing folks visit Whitewood nowadays?
Any witches buried there?
There are indeed.
On Candlemas Eve, a coven of witches gathered beneath the Raven's Inn to perform a black mass in the honor of Lucifer. The witch, Elizabeth Selwyn, marked a young girl for sacrifice.
Leave Whitewood. Leave Whitewood tonight.
Yes, sir. It's City of the Dead from 1960. Got 6.7 stars on IMDb. Written by Milton Sabatsky, directed by John Llewellyn Moxie. Stars Patricia Giselle, Dennis Lotus, and Christopher Lee in this bad guy. It's got a running time of only about an hour and 15 minutes, which is pretty nice. It's pretty refreshing these days. Before I get into the movie, though, I gotta tell you guys about something that I found on Tubi regarding this movie. Now, we've all probably seen this one at one point or another, or at least heard the sound grabs that Rob Zombie likes to rip out of this movie and shove into his songs, seemingly at random. But there's a guy in, I don't know where he is, he's doing a thing called Theater of the Supernatural. And you can find the first installment on Tubi. The guy's name is Jason DiAgostino, I believe. I've got it written down here somewhere. But it's pretty cool, but it's kind of wacky at the same time. Hear me out, okay? Okay. What he did, he took this movie, City of the Dead, or Horror Hotel, as it's also known, and he kind of animated over it. He did like his own... it's the same movie, But have you, it's kind of like a Scanner Darkly, what he did with it. And he added some extra scenes into it, entirely animated, that are that kind of add a level. I don't know how to. He explains the whole thing at the beginning of the movie. And basically what he's saying is that these extra scenes that he added are going to tie into other movies that he's going to do on Theater of the Supernatural. And it's going to kind of create like a Theater of the Supernatural horror interlocking universe kind of a thing. It's worth checking out, I think, especially if you're into this movie. Jason DeStefano. DeStefano is the guy I'm talking about. It's worth looking at, especially if you like this movie. So that being said, I don't want to push this off any further. Let's get into City of the Dead, shall we? We start off with a flashback. The Salem, well, not necessarily Salem, but the witch trials of New England, supposedly 1600s. They don't give any dates, but you can do the math on that. We have a small village somewhere in New England and a witch that is about to be burned at the stake. Her name is Elizabeth Selwyn, and they, you know, you got the whole lynch mob out there running around, torches and pitchforks and all that shit. They grab her, they pull her out of her fucking hut or whatever those things are, and they take her to the town square, and they're about to roast her, and then she's like, Jethro, Jethro, help me, and we meet her little cohort, guy by the name of Jethro Keen, who I guess was working with the witch, Elizabeth Selwyn. So the mob runs up to him, and they're like, hey man, you been working with this witch? And he's like, no. So they go ahead. And right before they light her on fire, she does like a, I'm going to curse this city, you motherfuckers. You're going to be cursed, this whole town here. And then on the back end of the crowd, behind the crowd, Jethro Keen is offering his, you know, he's trying to make a pact with the devil if he's listening. So they go ahead and light up Elizabeth Selwyn, and then like a rain starts. And we have to assume that she kicks it. Because from there, we're going to jump right to modern day, or at least by modern day, I mean 1960, where we have a college class in progress being taught by Christopher Lee. How about that? And he is basically recounting the events of the burning of Elizabeth Selwyn. And you got a young couple attending his lecture. We have Bill and Nan. And chicks had the weirdest names in the 50s. I assume Nan is short for Nancy, but why wouldn't you just go by Nancy? Nan sounds weird. I don't know. I guess that's just how they did things back then. Anyway, he's given his lecture, and he's getting a bit emphatic about the part where they light Elizabeth Selwyn on fire. And he's like, burn, witch, burn, burn, burn. And everybody's like, whoa, dude, just take it easy there. And then that's when Christopher Lee, Professor Driscoll, as his character is in this this tale, catches him and he's like, all right, hey, thought you were going to take my lecture seriously, you fucker. So then class is dismissed. Nan and Bill are supposed to go out on a date, but then Professor Driscoll is like, Nan, let me talk to you after class here. And Bill gets all pissed off. He goes outside the classroom. Then he immediately just turns around and starts eavesdropping on their conversation. And while he's doing that, Nan's brother, who also happens to be a professor, guy by the name of Dick, comes in and he's like, hey, Bill, how are you? It's another thing I never understood. That weird way of talking that men did in the 50s. Well, how are you there, Bill? I see you're trying to get in my sister's pants again. I'm proud of you, son. Why do they talk like that? Was that like a... Is that supposed to be some kind of an accent or something? Was it just the dialect of the day? I don't know. It's always fascinated me, because that just went away at some point. People stopped talking like that. Anyway, Bill comes in. He's like, hey... Dick comes in. He's like, hey, Bill, how are you? And then Bill and Dick have a conversation. Bill's like, hey, man, she's in there talking to Driscoll about his witchcraft bullshit. And he's like, well, you know, Nan, when she gets her mind set on something, she just whatever. In the classroom, Christopher Lee is talking to Nan. He's like, hey, man, you got some serious talent here. Your research is very thorough. You're taking the subject seriously. I love that about you. And Nan is like, hey, man, yeah, no, I'm into it. I dig it. By the way, I think I'm going to take 2 weeks and go up to that little town that you were talking about, Whitewood. Apparently, Whitewood is where the original witch burning took place. I'm going to go up to Whitewood and spend 2 weeks there, do some research, and really, you know, do a thorough investigation for my term paper. It's going to be awesome. And Driscoll's like, oh, okay, well, yeah. If you're going up there, you might as well stay at the Raven's Inn. And a friend of mine runs the place. Her name is Mrs. Newless. Newless. Just saying, Selwyn Newless, if you haven't figured this part out yet. And just go up there, mention my name. She'll hook you up with a room. So, yeah, go up there. And after that, of course, she leaves and gets into a huge fight with her boyfriend, Bill, and her brother. Her brother goes in there and talks a bunch of shit to Driscoll, too. Oh, this witchcraft, you know, it's just too wacky. I'm a scientist, Driscoll, you know. I believe in facts and numbers and things like that. And Driscoll's like, well, yeah, you're also a prick. He didn't say that, but he should have. So big fight now between Bill and Nan because they had plans for the weekend. And also between Dick and Nan because they also had plans. They were supposed to go to Susie's birthday. I don't know who Susie is or why we have to go to her birthday. But Nan is canceling all of that shit to make her pilgrimage, no pun intended, to the small town of Whitewood. So we, you know, we get the traveling montage of Nan driving a car up to Whitewood. She gets pretty late. Once you hit a certain point, I'm assuming she's moving north to into New England. She, I think, I don't know, maybe south. Anyway, at some point, the place is just on fire. I don't know why, but there is smoke everywhere, like all over the ground. And constantly, this fucking smoke fog situation never goes away. And it's dark there all the time also, so that's a thing. Anyway, she gets out into the rural part, headed towards Whitewood, which apparently is not on a map. She has to stop at a gas station and get directions. Once she gets out on the lonely roads, she sees like a random dude just standing on the side of the road. And she pulls over and she's like, hey man, I am lost as shit. Where the fuck is Whitewood? And he's like, oh, it's just, you just gotta keep going up this road and then you make a left and you're pretty much there. By the way, it's late and I'm tired and I'm going to Whitewood also. Would you mind if I hopped in? And she's like, yeah, sure, climb on in there. So they start driving and he introduces himself as Jethro Keen. Satan's disciple himself, Jethro Keen in the house. Okay. Quiet, kind of a creepy dude. But she's very friendly and helpful, so she's driving. Making small talk. You know, I grew up in Whitewood, he says. We don't get a lot of new faces in that town because, I don't know, people just don't want to go there very much. And she's like, oh, I'm writing a college paper about witches, so this is perfect for me. He's like, yeah, well, we got a, you know, a little bit of a witch problem up there, I guess. So, yeah, it's you'll learn a lot about witches, that's for sure. She gets to Whitewood, and she sees the church, which is all busted up. She finds the Raven's Inn, and she's, like, looking out the window. She's like, oh, that's a Raven's Inn. I gotta go in there and find Mrs. Newless. And Jethro is like, yeah, that's a Raven's Inn right there. And she turns around, and Jethro has vanished completely out of her car. Kind of creepy. She goes in there, into the Raven's Inn. It just looks like a house with a guest room. You would expect, like, there to be like some kind of a structure, but it really just looks like a house. She goes in, place is dark as shit, very creepy, very quiet also. Spots Mrs. Newless. She is also played by Patricia Giselle, the same actress that played Elizabeth Selwyn. Newless, Selwyn, you see where we're going with this? She comes down, she actually looks pretty good. In the when she's in Mrs. Newless, she's got like a Cruella de Vil thing, but I think it's kind of hot in a way. I don't know why. Maybe it's just my upbringing, but I thought she was kind of hot as Mrs. Newless. Comes down, she's like, "Hey, welcome to the Raven's Inn. We're getting ready to close." And she's like, "Oh, well, I'm hoping you have a room. I'm going to be here for a couple weeks." And she's like, "No, we're all booked up. Get the fuck out of here." And Nan is like, "Well, my friend Professor Driscoll sent me up here, not to name drop or anything." And then, of course, Mrs. Newlis is like, okay, now you didn't tell me that. We got a little room we can set you up in for a couple weeks. So she gives her a room off the main floor. She gets settled in. After that, while Nan is getting settled in, we see Jethro Keen pop out behind Mrs. Newlis. And they have like a quick little, exchange. Jethro's like, I see she has arrived. And Mrs. Newlis is like, yes, everything is coming together. From there, Nan like gets settled in. She's like, you know what? I'm going to go for a walk here around your town, see if I can spot some cool stuff. I'm got to do some research. So she gets out. Again, the streets of Whitewood, it's perpetually dark in Whitewood. I don't know if that was part of the story or if Nan only goes out at night for some goddamn reason. Totally dark and with just a fucking... Oh, like somebody just is chasing Nan around with a fire extinguisher is the level of fog that is rolling through Whitewood at any given point. She's walking around. She's getting the stink eye from all the locals, and they're all just stopping and staring at her as she goes. She's like getting seriously creeped out, but then she spots the old church. So she's like, let me go check out the church, see if there's anybody in there. Knocks on the door, and a blind priest opens the door. And this is our crazy Ralph moment, because this priest, while he may not be crazy, he is definitely blind, and he has got a flair for the dramatics. Leave Whitewood at once! This is a town of evil! This is God's house, and I am the protector! But you must leave immediately, or you too will be damned as the people of Whitewood! Very creepy stuff, as you can tell. I have never taken an acting class in my life, inmates, if you can believe that. That's all natural talent right there. Anyway, she gets the very ominous warning from the blind priest to leave Whitewood immediately. She's like, I got to do this paper, but I'm sure your church was very nice at some point. And he's like, try to keep the church up because this is God's house. And she's like, okay, then I'm just going to head on back to the Raven's Inn. Thank you very much for your time. Starts walking back to the Raven's Inn again with the locals giving her the stink eye. Makes it back to the Raven's Inn. She notices that there's a trap door in the room that she's staying in. And it looks like the kind that would lead to an attic, but the ring that you would use to pull it up has been removed, so she can't get into it. And that night, she starts hearing all these weird sounds coming from the whatever's underneath her room. So she goes out and finds Mrs. Newlis. She's like, hey, man, I know I'm not paying for this room, but what the fuck is going on downstairs? And Mrs. Newlis is like, there is no downstairs. We had the cellar filled in to help strengthen the foundation. So there's nothing. That's why we took the ring out of the trap door there. She's like, well, all right, I don't know. They go into the room and the sounds have stopped, and then they come out, and then Mrs. Newlis has a conversation with, Jethro Keen, and he's like, are the festivities ready? And she's like, yes, the guests will arrive soon. very scary. We know these two are up to no good because they're clearly, I don't know, Satan's disciples or whatever the fuck. Denizens of evil, if you will. So the timeline in this movie is pretty wacky. Because right about now, we're going to cut to Susie's party, where Dick and Bill are hanging around. They're cutting the cake with Susie, and everybody's having a great time at Susie's party. Bill pulls Dick aside, and he's like, well, I'm worried about Susie. Or I'm worried about Nan. Dick is like, what's your problem? Why are you worried about Nan? And he says that he hasn't gotten any letters from her in 2 weeks. So if we're to follow this timeline and we're kind of going back and forth, when Nan first left Driscoll's office, she said she was going to be gone for a couple of weeks and that she would write Bill, right? Now we're cutting to what should probably be I guess her first or second night in Whitewood, and Bill is saying he hasn't gotten a letter in 2 weeks. So what I have to assume Number one, Nan wrote Bill a letter as soon as she got to Whitewood. And that, like, literally as she was pulling in. And he got that letter. And now 2 weeks have passed and there's been no word from Nan. I guess. I don't know. Anyway, we're going to cut back to Nan. They just kind of blow it off. Now we're going to cut back to Nan. I have to assume some time has passed from the church encounter to now. Again, she's out cruising the streets of Whitewood looking for love in all the wrong places. And again, all the locals are giving her the stink eye. A couple of them start following her around, and she gets really freaked out. And again, it's pitch black, and there's a constant rolling fog rolling through the streets of Whitewood. I would be freaked out, too. She's apparently far, you know, a distance away from the Raven's Inn, so she just sees a bunch of lights on in a store, so she just runs into the store as fast as she can. In there, we're going to meet Patricia Russell, who apparently grew up in Whitewood. She now owns this little curio shop, and she recently moved back to Whitewood. She inherited the shop from her grandmother. So Patricia's like, "Hey, you look like a normal human being. Good to see you." And Nan is like, "Hey, I'm glad somebody here isn't giving me the fucking stink eye." And they kind of strike up a little conversation and a very quick friendship, and Nan is like, "Well, I'm here doing, you know, research for my paper. Do you have any books or any kind of pamphlets or anything about witchcraft?" And Patricia's like, "You know, I don't know. I just opened this place. All this old crap is all my grandmother's. Let me look around and see what I can find for you." She disappears into a back room and comes back with what is clearly a grimoire, and it's a big leather-bound thing. And she's like, "Oh, I found this. It's a treatise on witchcraft and devil worship, as written by the town elders of Whitewood. Probably worth a few bucks." She shows it to Nan, and Nan's like, "Wow, let me check that shit out." Nan is like, "There's no way I can afford this book, but is there any chance I could possibly borrow it from you?" And Patricia's like, "Yeah, sure, just bring it back in a day or two." So Nan takes off back to the Raven's Inn with her book, and she lays down in bed and starts doing her research. Now, when she gets there, there appears to be a full-on raging party happening at the Raven's Inn. Very cool. Like, people dancing. So, this part is a little strange, I thought. Nan gets in bed, and she's wearing, like, a house coat situation. Something that you probably found your grandmother wearing at some point. And she's laying in bed reading the book and taking notes and stuff. And at some point, she pops her head out, and Mrs. Newless is there. And she's like, "Hey, there's a party and dancing coming up. Why don't you come on out here and meet some of the locals? Maybe you can get some information from them." And Nan is like, "Oh, sure. Let me just, finish my notes here, and then I'll be right out." So Nan goes back in. She takes her house coat off, and she's got like this slinky, sexy lingerie number on underneath the house coat. Oh, I didn't see that coming, that's for sure, number one. Number two, I now have to wonder, and we all should really wonder, what the hell our grandmothers were wearing underneath those house coats, dude. Because that's, you get to see. I mean, you don't get to see nipples or anything, but you get to see quite a bit of, I don't know the actresses. Hold on, I'll pull it up. You get to see quite a bit of Nan's body, and she looked pretty good, if you ask me. Nan was played by Venetia Stevenson, and she looked pretty good, I'll tell you that right now. Anyway, and then Nan is like, okay, she puts like a dress on over the lingerie, and then she pops out of her room. She's like, "Okay, I'm ready to party." All of a sudden, the music has stopped, and everybody is gone, vanished. The place is now empty. So she's like, "Well, what the fuck? I come out here to party, and everybody bounces. Fuck this." But then she hears like voices coming from a cellar door. So she's like, okay, maybe they just took the party downstairs. Goes down into the cellar, looks empty. As soon as she gets all the way down the stairs, she's immediately surrounded by people wearing robes. They grab her, they pull her into a chamber further back in the cellar, they strap her down to a table, and then they stab her right in the heart. Hiya! Boom! Nan is D-E-D and out of this movie. I did not expect that to happen. I'll be honest with you. The first time I watched this movie, goddamn, back when I was in high school, and that scene right there, I thought for sure Nan was going to get herself captured, and Bill and Dick were going to come and save her. Nope, they killed her, and she is dead. That's actually pretty refreshing, I think, because normally in movies of this period, there's the damsel in distress, and then the hero comes and saves her at the last possible minute and dispels the evil or whatever. Not this time, man. Not this time. She's going down. Okay, now we cut back to Bill and Dick. They're getting more and more worried about Nan, and apparently it's been more than a couple of weeks now. Dick goes in to question, Driscoll, Christopher Lee. He's like, hey, where's Nan? What have you done with her, you son of a bitch? And Christopher Lee is like, she went up to Whitewood for the paper. I guess it has. Excuse me, it has been more than a couple weeks. Maybe give her a call. So apparently this was something you could do in the 50s. You could just pick up a phone, and the operator would be there waiting to hear from you, and you would say, give me Whitewood. I want to talk to Nan Barlow. And she would just magically know who and where you were trying. What you were, she would help you accomplish your mission in some fashion. I don't know how that works. Switchboard operators, right? I don't know. Call the Ravens in. Nobody answers. Okay, fuck. So now Bill is like, well, now I have to go up to Whitewood to find my sister. Or actually, Dick says that. Bill's like, oh, okay. But Bill actually waits for Dick to leave, and then Dick hops in a car and follows Bill up there quietly. I don't know why they didn't just go together. That doesn't make a lot of sense. Bill's on his... Dick goes first, and Bill is right behind him, unbeknownst to Dick. They get up there into the New England backcountry, and it's dark again, and the fucking fog machine is going all the goddamn time. Dick makes it to the gas station. He gets the directions from the same old guy, headed up to Whitewood. Bill loses him in the fog, so he stops at the same gas station, gets the same directions from the same old guy, and now he's headed up to Whitewood. Problem, Bill somehow like has a Elizabeth Selwyn flashback and careens off the road and wrecks his car. He gets like a flash of Elizabeth Selwyn burning at the stake, and then he goes, ah! And then he drives off the side of the road and hits a tree and wrecks his car. Good news, he lives. Bad news, he's got a bunch of grease on his face, and he's now staggering around like he's hurt. All right, fair enough. Cut to Whitewood. Dick gets there. Now, at this point, Nan is dead, and she is no longer accounted for. We have to assume they either dismembered her or threw her corpse in a fire or whatever they did. She is dead, and that's that. That's the end of this her equation in this movie. Dick gets up there. He goes to check into the Ravens Inn, or at least ask some questions. He talks to Mrs. Newlis, and he's like, hey, what about my sister? Mrs. Newlis is like, yeah, man, I don't know. She checked in. She was here for a couple weeks. And then we woke up one morning, and all of her stuff was gone, and her car was gone. And that's that. And he's like, well, all right, then. So then he goes, and he starts walking around Whitewood. He's now getting the creepy stares from everybody. He goes into the little shop there and talks to Patricia Russell. Now, Patricia, we find out, is actually the granddaughter of the blind priest that went to drama school earlier in the movie. So she's like, yeah, my dad's the church priest over there. No, he doesn't have a congregation anymore because nobody goes to church in this town. But he talked to Nan, and I think he kind of creeped her out. That's why she ran in here. And I don't know. She borrowed my book, and then I didn't hear from her, so I went to the Ravens Inn, and Mrs. Newlis gave me my book back, and she said Nan just packed up and left, and that was that. So pretty creepy stuff. Easy to understand, though, because this is a small-ass town, and everybody gives newcomers the heebie-jeebies. Fair enough. So from there, Dick goes back to the Ravens Inn. Bill is pretty much out of the equation until the closing credits. Dick goes back to the Raven's Inn. He's like, I want to see the room where my sister was. So he goes in there. Now, at this point, this whole fucking thing revolved around two witches' holidays. One was Candlemas, which was the night that Nan was sacrificed. And now tonight is the witches' Sabbath. So they need another sacrifice. And fuck me if one didn't just walk right in the door and his name is Dick. And he's being kind of dicky about things. So Dick goes out of the lobby after checking out, the room where Nan was staying in. While that's happening, back at the curio shop, all the hooded guys rush the place, grab Patricia, and rough up her dad. Now, Dick was about to leave, but he saw them, like, her dad, the priest, comes out, and he's like, ah! So Dick goes running in there. He's like, where's Patricia? What have you done with her? And he's the priest, so they're taking her to the candle mat, or the Raven's Inn, where they will sacrifice her to the devil. So he's like, shit, I gotta get in there. So he goes in there, he goes down to the basement where they are just on the point of sacrificing Patricia. Unfortunately, this is when Mrs. Newlis and Jethro Keen have to give their quote-unquote, no, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die speech. They rough up Dick pretty good, but Dick manages to get one of Patricia's arms free. She flees out into the graveyard. Dick goes up after her. The people in the robes are chasing him. They're fighting, and there's like two guys jump on Dick, and that's when Bill comes staggering out of the woods, and he's like, ugh! The priest is there, but he's still kind of like half-ass alive. He's like, the shadow of the cross will dispel the evil. So Dick shouts that at Bill. Bill pulls a headstone out of the ground and like holds it up, and I'll be goddamn if laser bolts or something pretty similar don't start zapping out of the headstone and blasting the people in the robes and putting them on fire. Now, according to the book, The Treatise of Devil Worship and Witchcraft, the sacrifice has to be made on the 13th hour, which technically would be 1 p.m., if anybody knows anything about military time, but by the looks of it, it's well past midnight. You can't do it on Candlemas. Yeah, it has to be done at exactly the 13th hour. So that's why they can't kill Patricia right there in that moment to complete the ritual. They have to wait for the 13th hour, and you see the clock ticking towards something. I couldn't make out what numbers it was going to. But Bill is holding it up, and then Mrs. Newlis throws a dagger and tags Bill in the back with it. Yay! And he goes down, but then Dick gets free and holds it up again and manages to zap Mrs. Newlis and Jethro Keen with the Christ laser bolts or whatever you want to call it, and that pretty much ends everybody there. I don't think Bill made it. I think he got killed because he took the knife in the back after the car accident, and then he just kind of collapsed after he held up the tombstone for like 14 seconds. And then you just see Dick and Patricia jump in the car and go peeling out of Whitewood. And that, my friends, is the end of your movie. City of the Dead. I like it. I like it a lot. Also known as Horror Hotel. You might find it under that title if you can't find it. Pretty good show. Like I said, it's an hour and 15 minutes, man. It's gothic horror. You could also call it folk horror, I guess, in a weird way. It's a good show. And especially for 1950, or excuse me, 60, you don't normally see the damsel get killed. Usually she gets saved by a hero at the last possible second. This time she went down hard, like in a ritualistic fashion, which is pretty awesome, I'd say. Check it out. You can find it. It's public domain, dude. You can find it just about anywhere. Also, if you want to check out that weirdo animated version I told you about, it's streaming on Tubi. You just got to look up Theater of the Supernatural. It's not going to be under City of the Dead or Horror Hotel. But check that out. The guy gives you like a full explanation of what you're looking at before the movie starts. If you're interested, Hopefully there will be other installments. This is the only one I could find, but it's worth at least putting some eyeballs on. Don't sit through the whole thing. The color schematic is kind of psychedelic and it'll give you a headache. All right, anyway, I've droned on long enough about that. I will take myself a little break and come back with some other stuff.
Describe this feeling would be
Hey inmates, if you like what you hear, head over to the Padded Room Facebook group and support us through the patron link with a small monthly donation. Check out the T-Villain link at paddedroom.podbean.com and grab some t-shirts. Thanks for listening and enjoy the rest of the show.
And I am back, ladies and germs. Well, 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 I think it's time for Three on a Meat Hook.
Three on a Meat Hook.
This week's Meat Hook, black and white horror movies. A lot can be said for black and white horror movies, you know? Color is great, don't get me wrong. Like 95% of my favorite horror films are in color. But there is a certain charm and a certain noir element to black and white horror, if you know what I'm talking about. I'm going to kick it off with number three. What I would call probably one of the best, not necessarily a horror film, but a good murder mystery. I'm talking about Dementia 13, Francis Ford Coppola's very first film. One of the first films that I've seen where the hero, or the protagonist, I guess, was a real bitch. And you're kind of... you're rooting for her because you don't want to see her get killed. But at the same time, when she does get killed, meh, you know. Basically, it's this this money-grubbing hua whose husband dies. And she can't. She has to pretend that he's still alive because she's looking at getting an inheritance from her in-laws. So she goes to the family reunion and tries to pass everything off like he's still alive, even though she threw his body in the bottom of a lake. And everybody's starting to get wise, and eventually the bodies start stacking up, and we have to figure out who the killer is. It's not too hard to figure out, but still, pretty good show. The music, the score alone is definitely worth checking this one out if you haven't seen it. I believe it's public domain if you're interested. I'm sure you've seen it. It's from the 60s, so there's that. My number two... is going to be going to go even further back from my number two. We're going all the way back to the 30s. One of my favorite films of all time. I can watch it anytime it's on. It's The Old Dark House from 1932, I believe. Starring Boris Karloff. Fucking that other guy. Who is that guy? Oh, God. He just passed away not too long ago. He was in Ghost Story, and he was in Changeling, and he got blackballed from Hollywood during the McCarthy era, even though he wasn't a communist. God damn it, I'm going to give you his name right now, and I'm going to kick myself Because I'm looking up the old dark house from 1930. Melvin Douglas, you motherfuckers. Melvin Douglas. Great, great actor. Great movie. Also, there's like a little bit of a comedic element, you know, even though some of the imposing, age-old tale of, you know, the couple is driving, and they're driving through a storm, and then their car gets stuck in the mud, so they have to take shelter in the titular old dark house, where, of course, there is a cavalcade of nutsack characters waiting for them. And the whole thing culminates into a fiery inferno in the end. But, I quote this movie all the time. He can't speak, you see. Morgan is dumb. It's only gin, you know. Only gin. I rather like gin. I love it. It's got a very gothic element, too. Like, the house is huge. They do a lot of shadow stuff with the fire because, of course, the power goes out halfway through the night. Shadow work in the hallways. The curtains are blowing in and out. It's a great show. It's one of my favorites. I know there's a remake that was made in the 60s. Total comedy. Dumb as shit. Don't waste your time with that one. It's got the guy from Newhart in it. And lastly, my number one black and white horror film of all time is also my number one film of all time. And my number one horror film of all time. And my number one zombie film of all time. I am talking, of course, about Night of the Living Dead. I don't think you can find a better movie all the way around. For the time it was made, there's not really a gothic element to it, but there is a survival horror. I think it was the first survival horror movie that we had. The first siege narrative. You have the survivors in the house while the undead horde is trying to get at them. The dynamic between the survivors. There's naturally going to be a couple of fucking assholes in there, and there's going to be a couple of alpha males in there. One chick is just completely catatonic. It broke a lot of new ground, that movie. And a lot of people call it an important movie. And I understand why. It was one of the first movies with an all-white cast with a black hero, which is groundbreaking. Also, had a black man striking a white woman. You didn't see that back then. Now, George Romero will tell... I'm not going to do a deep dive on Night of the Living Dead, but it's a great movie. I'm sure you've seen it. If you're listening to this podcast, you've seen Night of the Living Dead. Let's be real. Check it out again. Watch one of these new Ultra 4K releases. I think, actually, there's a lot to be gained, especially when it comes to black and white, for like the low quality, low grade, Super 8 versions, you know, where it's all kind of grainy and there's things that you can't see going on, but do you need to see them? Maybe not. Maybe it's better left in the shadows. I don't know. I would like to know what your top three black and white horror films are. Hit me up. The mental health hotline, of course, is area code 775-387-0275. Or you get me on the email. Just go to paddedroompodcast.com, hit the contact us link. Or you can just click the three on a meat hook link. Put your shit in there. Do it however you want. I'm here for you guys. In the meantime, I think it's time for me to tell you what I've got to watch this week in a segment I like to call, What Are You Looking At, Tough Guy?
What are you looking at?
I only got one movie in this week. It was A Bucket of Blood from 1959. Also black and white. Not a very good movie by really any standard. I don't know if anybody's paying attention, but The Last Drive-In is back on over at Shudder. Did the series premiere with a tribute to Roger Corman. Did A Bucket of Blood, which was one of his first movies, and then Death Stalker, which is some kind of a Conan the Barbarian knockoff from the looks of it. I've never heard of it. Apparently, they're going to be changing the format of The Last Drive-In this season. They're going to do, instead of doing two movies every week, they're going to do one movie every other week. But, from the sounds of it, it's going to allow the season to go on a lot longer, which is pretty cool. They usually do 15 to 17 movies in a season. So I don't know, man. It sucks for me because I got football practice on Friday night, so I can never watch the show live. But I do like being able to go back and watch it, you know, within the week after they put it up on the streamer. So, you know, I'm excited. Dude, I love the shit out of Joe Bob and The Last Drive-In. That's, you know, I go back and watch old episodes all the time. I wish they would keep the rights to the fucking movies, because you go back now to the first season and you get like episode 3, 9, and you know, 11, and that's it. The rest of the movies are all gone. So those are the only ones you can watch. Anyway, I watched Bucket of Blood. Not a very good movie. You basically have the struggling artist, the sculptor, played by the immortal Dick Miller, by the way. And he accidentally kills his cat, but then he makes like a sculpture out of the dead cat. And then he accidentally kills a cop, so he makes a sculpture out of him. And the bodies keep stacking up, and the sculptures keep getting more elaborate. And every one of these dead sculptures that he makes, he gets more fame and notoriety and money. So before you know it, he's basically a serial killer. And that's what it boils down to. Not a very good movie. There was actually a remake in the early 90s. I don't know if you guys remember on Showtime, I want to say like 94 to 96, there was a show called Roger Corman Presents. And I think it ran every week, and they would do one of his movies, and then they would just pick some random fucking sci-fi or horror movie and throw that in on there also. Bucket of Blood was actually remade specifically for Roger Corman Presents, and it starred Anthony Michael Hall as the struggling artist. That's not very good either. So it's fine, I guess. It's you really got to be into beat poetry. I think the original is now public domain, if anybody wants to check it out, or go to Shudder and watch Joe Bob and Darcy do their thing with it. That's all I got to watch this weekend, mates. I think it's time for some immersion therapy.
Immersion therapy.
Is there such a thing as too much Italian when it comes to horror movies? I didn't think so until I watched last week's Immersion Therapy, talking about The Sect from 1991, streaming on Shudder if you're interested. I'm used to Italian movies not making a lot of sense, but just being fun to watch and look at. This one was distractingly nonsensical to me. You got the satanic cult, which apparently is a worldwide network, but still finds time to invade Southern California campsites just to harass hippies, I guess. And then on top of that, you have this poor young lady who just happened to rent the house on top of the portal to hell, and the old man who's got to get there to throw the magic box in. Dude. Love me some Italian stuff, and I will sing the praises of early Argento to my grave, you know? And same thing with Bava, Fulci, love those guys. Luigi Cozzi, of course. The list goes on. But at a certain point, I think this is when they started falling away. It was early 90s. They're trying to keep that color palette, supernatural nonsense formula going. And I think at that point, that's when we kind of jumped into slasher territory, which had surpassed the giallo in a way. I don't know, man. It just didn't make any sense to me, The Sect. And no, I'm not going to watch it again, because not only did it not make... the fact that it didn't make sense kind of took me out of the movie altogether, you know? Trying to make this make sense is like a full-time gig, you know? And then, I mean, it still had the Italian element. There was some boobs. Her teacher friend that went into the shady junkyard to make out with the five guys and took her shirt off in the storage box. Again, does that make a lick of sense to anybody? No. Maybe culturally in Italia, in Italy, that's something that happens. Chicks just go make out with random blue collar guys and let them finger bang them. But I here it just is weird and sexually confusing to a young man, I'm sure. I don't know. If you're interested, go ahead. If not, that's fine too. Your immersion therapy for this week is going to be The Elevator from 2023. This bad guy is streaming on Peacock. It stars Chrissy Wuna and Alex Maxwell. It's directed by Becca Harani. Something about a haunted hotel, and I'm sure The Elevator is a prominent part of that. I assume. I didn't really watch the trailer or anything like that. Check that shit out, inmates. I will do the same and compare notes next. We can compare notes next week. But now, I'm afraid it is time to educate me.
Educating Miss Monica.
First, my clues from last week. Well, I just bought a house in a small town, and it's mainly to get away from the memory of my adult son who just died. Not the memory, I feel like we just need to move on, and my unattractive wife is coming with me. God damn, if there isn't some burned up family, ghosts, I think, in the basement that have brokered a deal with the town to where the town is going to provide them with sacrifices to keep them from destroying the town in its entirety. Fuck, if I didn't buy the house, now I gotta be the sacrifice, but I think I might be able to renegotiate that deal with the burned up people, and maybe they can really wreak some havoc on the town and leave me. The town can be the sacrifice. Me and my unattractive wife can actually live here peacefully, I think. Let's see what we can do with that. I am, of course, We Are Still Here, which is a great movie. Great small town horror movie. Barbara Crampton, the least attractive you will find her ever, I think, is in We Are Still Here. And I don't know what the hell possessed us in the early 80s to believe that a female with a tight bowl cut is somehow hot. Who the fuck signed off on that? Who is that hot to? Who looks at a lady that more closely resembles a Q-tip and says, I gotta get me some of that? I don't think you'll find any adult film stars rocking that haircut in any time frame. And if they do, I would like to see it. I would like to know if I can beat off to that. All right. Who might I be this week, you ask? Well, I am a newlywed husband, and my wife and I just, we spent a lot more money than we actually had in buying this very picturesque lake house. Beautiful place. Everything seems to be just amazing, except we are now house poor, and how the fuck are we going to pay for all this? I don't know. Tell you what we'll do. We're going to rent this place out as an Airbnb, and we'll just go camping every time somebody wants to rent it, and that'll be awesome. Son of a bitch, if there isn't a murder for hire plot, and goddamn, if we didn't buy a haunted house, and now I got a hitman that was hired by a crazy young lady's grandmother to come up here and kill the young lady, and he wants to do it at my house. Place is already haunted. Everything's just going to get completely fucked up. It might end up being more haunted now. We got this murder thing going on. And you know what? We're just going to start fresh. We're going to sell this house. We're going to get the fuck out of here. I got to call her and let her know that we're going to have to kick her out. So we go there, and the fucking hitman is still in the house trying to kill the granddaughter. We can't find the granddaughter anywhere, and we're going to have to deal with this hitman now, because that's a thing. And the place is still haunted. It's a shitstorm is what's going on here. Who might I be, you ask? Tune in next week, and I'll drop some knowledge on you, inmates. In the meantime, I'm going to apologize for the short show. It was just me, and things are short when it's just me. Join me next week for Blair Witch 2, Book of Shadows, closing out Witch Month here in the Padded Room. Thank you guys very much for joining me. It means a lot to me that you guys are still bothering to listen to this horse shit. Like, comment, subscribe whenever you get a chance, feel like it. Helps my visibility quite a bit. And, hey, don't be afraid to tell a friend. There's a crazy guy in Reno. Won't shut up about horror movies. We do have a Patreon campaign running if anybody feels like chipping in. Just go to paddedroompodcast.com. You'll find all the information you need about that. Me, Buddy, Jason, previous co-hosts from decades gone by, movie schedules and lineups, all the fun stuff over there. In the meantime, I think that's about it for me this week, inmates. Thank you again for joining me. For Buddy in Absentia, Jason in Absentia, The Crow remake, which I'm going to stand by until I see the actual movie, Witches, Bitches, and Stitches, Haunted Lake Houses, and the murder plots that take place in already Haunted Lake Houses, and the Padded Room podcast, I'm afraid visiting hours are over. Click my heels and dance with the heat drive.